is Wednesday, July 3rd, 2002. This is Kathleen Langley from the St. Mary's University Archives, and I'll be interviewing Dave Jones about his experiences at St. Mary's College today. Mary's High School and College today. What is your full name?
David Ignatius Jones.
Could you spell that, please? Well, Ignatius.
The middle name.
Yeah.
I-G-N-A-T-I-U-S.
Great.
He was the founder of the, St. Ignatius was the founder of the Jesuit order that was at St. Mary's when I arrived there on Windsor Street. Okay. The old college on Windsor Street?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When and where were you born?
I was born January 3rd, 1928 in Rockingham, just outside the city, about 4 or 5 miles towards Bedford.
Mm-hmm. I used to play basketball there.
Did you?
Yeah.
So you could count the families in your fingers and toes out there then.
It's changed quite a bit, eh? Mm. Did your parents work outside the home?
My father died in 1932 of a massive heart attack. He was 42, and my mother was the same age, and so I was just a week short of four. He died like December 19th before Christmas, and I turned five on January 3rd. And there were nine of us in the family. And one had died 6 months before my father, a little girl. And my mother was left with nine children from ages 1 to 14.
That's quite a bit, eh?
Yeah, right. Mm. How she survived it, I don't know.
When did you attend St. Mary's?
As I told you earlier, I should have boned up on the dates, but I believe I was there in the late 40s. I think around maybe 40. Now I got to stop and think about that. No, I was at St. Mary's before that. I went to the high school.
Okay.
For 2 years, grade 10 and 11.
Mm-hmm.
And now that I think of it, when I was in grade 11, the war ended. During recess, they announced the war was over.
Oh, my goodness.
And I remember that distinctly. So the war ended in 45, so I must have been there in 43 or 44 and finished grade 11 in 45. Mm-hmm. Then I went to St. Patrick's High School because you had to pay to go to high school there, and I couldn't afford to go any further. I was paying my own way. So I decided to go down there for a year because it was free, public school in St. Pat's.
Right.
And I went there for a year. My brother was down there. He took high school, grade 10, 11, grade 10, 11. Then he quit there, and we both went up and applied for St. Mary's. But we went into first year arts because your grade 12 didn't count. You had to take your first year arts over again or whatever you had then.
Okay.
Didn't get credit for any of your subjects, so I went to St. Mary's with my brother. He went there 2 years, and then he went down to Dalhousie and applied for the law school, and eventually graduated from law school. And I stayed there at St. Mary's, and I was out 1 year with illness, and I would have graduated in, I have to stop and think of this, perhaps you should shut off a second while I...
Oh, okay, sure.
I sat down for 52. I should have brought my yearbook. I could look it up.
Approximations.
I should have blown myself. 52, I believe, was the year.
Okay. How did you support yourself when you were in high school?
Well, what worked? I had jobs since I was 12 years old.
What
I started
were you doing?
Working. Well, my first job I had was they're building the new Bedford Highway. And it was a winding old road. and Standard Paving was building it, and they were going to be the first concrete highway in Canada. They're making a concrete road there. And it's much where the present road is now. So this gentleman was at my house, Mr. Redmond, and he told my mother they were looking for water boys down there. Dave should go down and apply. So I went right down right away. Saw the boss foreman, Angus Doyle. He was from Mabu. Got to know him, great friend for life. And he hired me as a water boy, and he got the same as labor got in those days, which was 40 cents an hour. I was 12, so that would have been 1940, I guess, war had started. And I was a water boy for 10 days, and then they advanced me to run the vibrator, small machine with a long arm on it and a metal end on it that would pack the cement in behind the spreader. So I handled that. I had to fill out a report just like the guy with the biggest machinery there. How much oil you burn, gas and stuff. But anyway, I got 25 cents an hour, a little more than the labor paying. And we worked long hours because in those days, highway work, they had to get it done in the summertime. So they'd start 7 o'clock in the morning and finish dark. Mm-hmm. So I worked there for a few months, and a chum of mine was with me. He was the water boy. He took the water boy's job, Harold Chamberlain, and we were there. We're almost down to Fairview to finish the road in another day. And the man of police came along and took each one of us in the car separately. And I was, well, what's this all about? Questioning us, you know, where do you live? Who do you live with? Your parents and all this stuff. And I asked him, what's the problem? And they said to the manager, what's going on? He said, well, we've had complaints along the road from some old biddies along the highway complaining that Standard Paving was using child labor. Well, I said, they were lucky to get this because, you know, the wartime came there. It was hard to get laborers. Everybody was in the forces. Mm-hmm. When the war started, everybody was joined up. It's a long story.
I'm long-winded. It's a good story, though.
Long-winded.
Were you
so I worked there, and then for years after, I had various jobs, too many to mention. I worked as meat department at Dominion Store on the Crickley Street near North, only second Dominion Store around here. It's one in Spring Yard, no, that was the second one. The meat counter, and I did that Christmas and holidays. I worked at the post office sorting mail during Christmas time, night shift. The main post office downtown, I worked... Worked at the Halifax Infirmary down the kitchen, and I put a few years in there, and I worked at the shipyards in Halifax one summer, and I worked for the Department of Highways with a survey crew. I worked with the CN Express was one of my main jobs. I got 75 cents an hour. I worked in the section gang on the railway, doing a section work out in the Rockingham Yard and clearing snow at wintertime, switches and all that. And I worked, but one of the best jobs I remember was I worked at CN Express. I worked night shift, 11:30 to 8:30 in the morning, sometimes longer, on weekends and holidays and summer while I was in law school. I worked there all the time. It was good. You got 75 cents an hour, would you believe, which is good money then. And that kept me going. Plus some loans. I got loans. You couldn't get student loans then, but you could get loans if you were applying to be a teacher, studying to be a school teacher. The problems had those, the first loans. And I was desperate, so I went down to the department and talked to the finance guy down there and talked. I said, look, you're not lending money. Nobody's borrowing it. How about give me a loan? They talked them into it, and they gave me a loan for a few $1,000.
Oh, my God.
And you had to pay that back. Every 6 months, you had to pay so much after you started working. I was still paying on that, I think, when I got out of law school, 10 years after I was married. But anyway, got there.
Were you and your brother the first in your family to attend college, or...?
Yes. Oh, no, I shouldn't say that. I had an older sister. She was a brilliant girl. She went to school at Mount St. Vincent. She took her BA and her PED, and she had her license in music from Toronto University through Maritime Conservatory, I think it was. And she was a great piano player. They're all very musical in the family. There were five girls and four boys. And everybody played something. But what was your question again?
Getting stupid. If you were the first in your family to attend college.
No, I had a sister. I had my oldest girl. She went to high school and she took a secretarial course for 2 years at the mountain, went to work. She had to get work help with the family. And then the next girl, she went to the mountain, took her bachelor of music and everything, and she got married, had three children. And then the next one was, she went to grade 12 at the mountain. And who else was there? There was Mary Elizabeth went to school, I think, a year at college, but she dropped it. She was a baby. And then Malcolm and I, Humphrey and Lucky, they went to work. They wanted to get work, get jobs, help out. And then Malachi and I were next to one sister, were the only ones that graduated from university, college.
Wow. Who were your professors while at St. Mary's?
Well, in high school, we had Jesuits were mostly Jesuits there then, not all of them, and Jesuit priests, and there was this up in college down Windsor Street, St. Mary's College they called it then. And in high school we had the main teacher was a father. He became a priest in time. He was a seminarian with the Jesuits, Father Farrell. He eventually taught grade 10B, which I went in first. They put me in that first trimute because I was coming from the country school in the city. And you had to write the entrance exam for the city to get into the high school here, and I passed that. And there was Father Farrell, and we had Jack Lynch. He was a layman. He taught the high school there math. And I forget who else taught there. There was him, and can't remember the others. Those two stand out in my mind. Then they moved me to 10B, the middle of the year, 10A, up to 10A. And then there was, I think, Father Keogh. He's a Jesuit priest in New Brunswick. He died. He's dead, and Farrell's dead. He died in India. Father Farrell was a missionary over in India and died there. And there's Jack Lynch taught math there too in the high school. And I think Father Farrell may have taught chemistry and physics in grade 11 there. I'm not sure. I can't remember right off. And then that was 10A, and then I went into grade 11, and Father Keogh was the main teacher in grade 11. There were others, but I just can't recall. Little tiny fellow, he died. He was from New Brunswick. Then when I went to St. Mary's College, there was we had I have to stop and think for a minute now. We had over the years we had Father McCarthy, who was known as Hank McCarthy.
Why was he known as that?
I don't know. They call him Hank. He's a big, rough sort of a fellow. He loved football and boxing and things like that, which he ran at the university, at the college. And there was Father O'Donnell was there. He was mainly taught Latin. And there's Father O'Rourke. Father O'Donnell was from Montreal. He's dead. Father O'Rourke was from Sydney. He was a Jesuit priest. He taught English, I think social studies, something like that. And then we had a Father Filion, who actually went to McGill University, studied law, then decided to join the Jesuit priests, and that's not him. Father Filion, we had him there. He was just a French, brilliant French fellow with a lot of degrees from Quebec. And he wrote a French book, actually, a French high school book. I think we used that, but the other priest I was thinking of was, and that was a fellow who studied law, that was Father, it was an Irish name. And we had Father Blair was there, and Mr. Ryan, But his friends knew him as Pinky Ryan. He was, he taught chemistry there and physics, I think. And there was Mr., the fellow went to Antigonation, I can't think of his name. He was the math teacher there. It'll come to me, Mr., can't think of it. May come to me before we finish here. I can see him, tall, blonde fellow.
I'll just make a note to come back to him.
Yeah, there was a couple of those fellows there. There was two of them laymen there, three. Father Blair, did I mention him? Jesuit priest taught there. Father LaBelle taught philosophy, ethics, and different philosophy classes at St. Mary's in my time. And there was Father, fellow who was the astronomer, Father Burke Gaffney, B-U-R-K-E hyphen Gaffney, G-A-F-F-N-E-Y. I think this big microscope on top of the building there is named after him. Mm-hmm. He was a brilliant man, a little Irishman from Ireland. He was a Jesuit priest, a little tiny fellow. He's just unbelievable. And genius, that fellow. But he taught, see, there was engineering, there was pre-engineering there, so there was science or pre-engineering, whatever you wanted to take, and there was arts, and there was commerce, Bachelor of Commerce, Bachelor of Arts, and science, Bachelor of Science, and pre-engineering, which was part of the science, and then they go to technical college, study engineering. But Father Belair, I mentioned him, he taught there too. Can't remember, he taught me as well. And that priest I'm talking about studied law. I can see him, but I can't pull him in. I've had some of the books here. I have books on with yearbooks. And he had an Irish name. He's from Montreal, bilingual. And there was, Father Smith, I think, was the rector, the head guy there when I first came there. And then there was another priest, I can't think of his name after that, I can see him. Or Father Mullally. Father Mullally, I think, came after Smith. And then, I think those were the only two when I was there. And it was a very... Anyway, I'll stop now on that, and you can ask your next question now.
Well, I was just going to ask you what the difference was between grade 10A and grade 10B.
10A was smarter oh, okay. group. You know, they were the... you know, they tried you out in 10B, and, you know, they looked at your previous marks, your record in school, and, mm-hmm. start you at 10B or 10A, whatever they thought you'd survive in, you know.
Okay, I understand. Was there a dress code at St. Mary's?
Well, yeah, you could come with sweatshirts or anything like that. As I remember, mm-hmm. everybody had to wear a shirt and tie and jacket, you know.
Okay.
Well, any kind, but they had to be well-dressed, you know. They didn't... It was just accepted that you... came dressed in a shirt and tie and maybe a sweater or button up in the front or something or a jacket, you know. I mean a suit coat or a jacket, you know.
Okay. Do you remember any other college or high school rules that stick out in your mind?
Not really. Can't think of any particular ones. No. St. Mary's was a small building on Windsor Street. It's not there anymore. St. Vincent's Guest House is there. And in the front was a tennis court there, screened in. And behind that was an old place called the Aurorum, which was a hockey rink. But it had natural ice. It wasn't artificial ice. They'd flood it and it'd freeze inside in the winter.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody skated in there. They had hockey... skating sessions in there for everybody, and they had the hockey team. They always had good hockey teams at St. Mary's. In those days, they had top hockey teams, and of course, the fellows would work out there and work out in the old Halifax Arena and the Halifax Forum beside.
Now, you were at St. Mary's when the war was going on and ended. How did these events change your school experiences, do you think?
I don't think it had too much influence on it, other than he kept attuned to the events and the things that happened during the war. We used to have blackouts because there was these artillery bases all surrounding the city. And they had, during the war, they had what is known as the ARP, which was the Auxiliary Reserve Patrol. And my brother belonged to that. You put an armband on, they had a mask, they gave you a helmet and everything like that. He was younger than me by 15 months. And when the sirens would go, there'd be a blackout, eh, that immediately these guys get their masks on and everything, and they'd have to go down the highway and stop the traffic, make put their lights out. And when the siren would go, everything had to be shut down, no lights, no candles, no nothing. And of course that always was interfered with studies on occasions, but what I did myself, I took my bedrooms in the back of the house and were near the woods. So I took and made a thing with pieces of wood like laths, and I made a thing to fit the window. And I covered it with tar paper on both sides, and I could just slap that up to the window, and I'd go outdoors and look, and you couldn't see any light out through it, even if I had a light on. So I did that, because sometimes they're out for an hour, sometimes longer. Depending, if they saw anything in the sky that they think it might be, you know, and the searchlights would all be shining up over the base and everywhere and looking at, see, identify this plane or whatever. And then it was sometimes just practice. And on occasions they had to put up smoke screens, they'd cover the Bedford Basin, put canisters all around the basin, they'd light them. Well, if the wind was, say, from the west, they'd put them on the bed, on the Rottnam side of the basin, on the highway, and they would, you couldn't see the base, and sometimes you couldn't even see in the village with the smoke screens. They were testing them, putting them up, and there was a lot of war preparation, you know. There was a lot of, we were conscious of the war, and when the war ended, that's another story.
You said they announced it over at recess?
I don't think they announced it. We're outside. I remember outside the boys smoking. I don't know how they smoked in those days. It was cool to smoke. Terrible thing. And we're outside smoking around the back of the building, and somebody came and said, the war is over. It's just been announced the war is over. And so we went back from school and said, school's dismissed. So we headed over to what we call Gussie's Grill. It was right on the, where the willow tree is. Mm-hmm. You know that parking garage that's there? There was a apartment complex there, and it had a store in the bottom. This Mr. Russell owned it. His son joined the Jesuits, became a Jesuit priest. I think he died. His name was Bill Brown. He joined the Jesuits, and his parents were very nice people. And Mr. Brown, the father, they used to call him Gussie Brown, so they called it Gussie's Grill. That was the name of this restaurant. It was a hangout for all the high school kids from Queen Elizabeth and St. Mary's and St. Patrick's down Brunswick Street. Mm-hmm. So we go there for lunch every day. And when I was at St. Mary's in high school, the boarders there, and a lot of the day hops that came from Eastern Passage and distant places, you know, Bedford or somewhere, mm-hmm. they could stay and buy dinner there. They had served dinners down in the basin. They had a great big, what would you call it, dining area.
At the college or?
At the college, oh. In the basement. And we'd go down there for lunch, and I had a few bucks then, so I'd get my lunch down there. It was cheap. But a reasonably good price, you know. Mm-hmm. And a couple of months there all the time I was there, so I think I remember for the 2 years. It may not have been fully, but I was there for at least a year. And there's a very strict code when you're down there for lunch. They could have prayers before and after lunch, the priest would, and you had to speak very softly, you know, you couldn't let loud, raucous noise during lunch, and they'd have somebody read scripture there to you, you know, while you were having lunch, and it was sort of a meditation period or something. And I did that for a couple of years there in the basement, I think, maybe a year at least, maybe longer. And anyway, when they declared the war over in grade 11, we all were told to go home, so I headed over to the Willow Tree, Gussie's. We all went there. And I remember that there was the old tram cars in those days, the old electric street cars.
Mm-hmm.
And out in the middle of the street in front of Gussie's Grill there, there was a, where the Holiday Inn is now, between there, there was a, the road would go on either side of a stand with chains on it, like, you know, and the people could stand up there and wait for the bus, and the traffic on either side, well, streetcars would come in there, you see, coming and going, there are two tracks.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember we went over there, and I remember one fellow in particular, I won't mention his name, that the streetcars were just filled with servicemen, because they all quit for the day and they're heading out for trouble. And they get on the, these fellows get on the, they're packed in the streetcar. And I remember these young fellows that I knew, they ran out and they were in class with me, actually. They ran out and they'd pull the rope on the back, which would unhook the thing that ride the rails up top. So the streetcar man was getting mad, he couldn't get it. So this sailors pulled the window down the back of the streetcar and they'd reach out and fix it back on. So finally this same guy, he ran up to try to pull it down again, and this sailors were taking a poke at him, you know, swinging at him to stop him, you know, hitting down with him. And he took a swing and he missed, and his light, there was a round light on the back of the, on the front and back of the streetcar with that size, with a, you know, for night driving. There was just glass in the front of it, and his fist went through that, and he cut his hand all up, and there was, right across the street, there was a doctor in a house there, and he went up there to the doctor. And things were getting a little out of hand. I remember this old, poor old man came along the street with two bicycle wheels and a little frame on it with a big, long ladder, you know, extension ladder. And he had this painting stuff on it. He was cleaning windows or doing something, I guess, and so they went out and they started grabbing the other end of it and pulling it from them, you know, and trying to get it from them, everything else. And anyway, I went home and I borrowed a bicycle with another fellow. We drove downtown, watched all the things going on. It was terrible up in the city and everywhere else. You know, they broke in all the liquor stores and all the big places around, and there was just riots down Barrington Street. They cleaned the windows every store in Barrington Street.
Oh my gosh.
Turned one of these streetcars over on the side by, just he made the turn from Barrington up by St. Mary's up to Spring Garden Road, roll that over. Turned over a police patrol wagon. And there was thousands of sailors down there. They were all drinking and tearing the stores. Well, they had to call in the army from Divert to stop it that night.
Oh my goodness.
It was a terrible riot, the PE Day riots. You've heard of that, haven't you?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the sailors were discontented and they let them out of the dock. They had nothing for them. So these guys are all heading downtown to go to the bars and everything. Well, there are no bars around, there are no taverns or anything. Head downtown for fun, and they couldn't get anywhere. They started busting the town up. And I remember three students, we're walking along Edward Street in Halifax during the day, and as we're walking along, these two students, knew them well from the Eastern Shore, I won't mention their names, was five sailors coming towards them. They never thought anything. Just as soon as they got up along the side of the sailors grabbed them, punched the daylights out of them, gave them two great big black eyes, and cut lips, and I think one of them had a broken nose, and they beat them up.
Oh my goodness.
And the next day they found on the campus at Dalhousie, they found a lieutenant commander who was killed. His body was never found out to this day. It was found dead on the campus, as I recall. So those riots were something else. I went home that night, and I remember we were on the Baden House field. It was nice hot weather, and we looked, and all of a sudden we saw these army vehicles, trucks borne in, loaded with troops and Bren gun carriers. They were like a small tank, but they're open. They carry troops in them. They had tracks on them. All this stuff was just roaring in the highway there. It took a long time to pass. You know, it took 20 minutes for that to get by us, I think, and then it went into the city, and they put them on top of the brewery up on Almond Street, Owens Brewery.
Mm-hmm.
They're up on top. They're mounted with sandbags and guns up there. And to guard that, because they were breaking in every liquor store and everything that was going on.
That's just crazy.
What?
I said
stealing,
that's just crazy.
Ripping things apart. Destroyed, you know, Eaton's was on Barrington Street then. They just hauled the matches out in the street and everything else. There it is.
They tore the whole city up.
Oh, yeah, that was terrible. Mainly Goddison Street. Barrington Street got the worst of it.
Just to go back to St. Mary's, do you remember the cost of education there for the high school or the college?
The figure $125 stands out in my mind. I think that's what it was.
Okay. Was that for a year or?
That was for the year, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And I remember when I was in college there, was a man by the name from Dartmouth. He was a teacher in the commerce, Mr. Baisley. What was his first name? They called him the Babe. That was his nickname. Great man. And I remember you had to go to the front door of the building there. And I remember times he would stand, his office was right by the front door. And his, you know, you had to pass in to get by. And he'd stand out there at lunchtime or after school. And I remember him... embarrassed me a few times. I was nervous to go by him because I was a little behind in payment my dues, and he was saying, look, he called me aside and said, you know, when are you going to pay us something? And I used to be embarrassed and he was to death. Anyway, survived that.
We certainly did. Where were the other students from? Were there a lot of boarders from away?
Quite a few. There was, Elmer McGilvery, who became a Jesuit and then quit the Jesuits later on, he was, they had the St. Mary's junior hockey team, and it played, well, it was a top hockey team here in Canada. The first line was Elmer McGilvery played center,
mm-hmm.
or right now, is he center ice? I think he was. Bert Hirschfield was on right wing, and I think Elmer, or Huey Campbell was on left wing. Bert was from Halifax, he's dead now, he married a Connolly girl, and he was a fantastic athlete. He played quarterback for St. Mary's in high school, St. Pat's in high school. He was top golfer, top tennis player, you name it, hockey player, paddler. He was an all-around fantastic athlete, and eventually played for a time with the Montreal Canadiens. Good friend. He was at St. Mary's, but he was from Halifax here. But Elmer McGilvery was from Reserve Mines in Cape Breton. He came. They lured him up here to play hockey, and he came there, or he went there. And Huey Campbell, they got him up to play hockey. He came.
Was he from Cape Breton too?
Yeah, Huey's from Sydney, I think. Or, okay. Yeah, and then they had. Well, they had other fellows from different places. I think Peanuts McLaughlin. I think he came to St. Mary's. He was from over in New Brunswick. St. John, I think, and there was, but there was a lot of people, boarders, I can think of, like, I'm trying to think of the fellow's name now, Steele. Harry, this Steele fellow was a great hockey player here. His, Bert Steele, played for Truro Bearcats. His brother Steele, what was his name? He went to St. Mary's for commerce, married a Cal girl from Antigonish, and he was from PEI. He went with Swift Canada over in PEI, and he retired over there. George Steele. And he boarded in Rockingham with some people there, friends and from the island. In Rockingham, there are a lot of islanders moved over to join the war from PEI. And he stayed with them as George Steele. And then there was Troy, a boy from Truro. What's his name? He's deceased now. He was from Truro. And then there was Aloysius Kaulbach from Sydney. He came down here and he went to St. Mary's. And there was Eddie McCormick, was from Grace Bay. There was Patton McLean from Guysborough came here. They're from all over, different places. There was a chap from Tanimbush, I can't think of his name right off, it come to me. And he eventually went to law school and went out west. But there were, the majority of people were from Halifax City, quite a few from the north end, but I'd say most of them were from the west end and Halifax South. Most of them were.
Okay. Could you give me an idea of what the college building was like on the inside, the classrooms, or where, if there was a library, that sort of thing?
Yes, on the when you went in the main front door, you on the left was where offices there, and on the right, and there was a chapel, in the a nice chapel to the right on the side of the building. And it held a few hundred people, and there was a, and then right in front was the auditorium with a stage there, and behind that, on that first floor, was the library, a nice library they had there. I think they called it the Power Library, after a gentleman, Elvis here, Mr. Power, Senator Power, I think. And then there was, in the basement, they had, washrooms down there, showers, various showers and washroom, and other rooms down there, but they weren't for anything for students. And then the next floor up was a lot of classrooms. There was 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, there was about 8 classrooms on that floor. Maybe more. And then the next floor, there was a couple of classrooms down the front, one particular I can think of. And then the Jesuit priest's living quarters on the top floor. And I forgot to say, as I said before, in the basement was the kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
And there was the dining room, which was big, served good meals. And there was an old gentleman there who was the they call him superintendent day of the building, but he was the janitor in our days, and his name was Mr. Shoup, S-C-H-U-P-E, and a little man, extremely popular. Everybody loved Mr. Shoup. He was there for years, and I think he retired just near the end when I was there, just before that, and I'm just thinking there was priest there, Father Foley. He was from Antigonish or Cape Breton. He was a Jesuit priest. I said Father LaBelle. He became the president later on. He left the Jesuits and married a woman from India or Persia, someplace like that, of her, went over there to live. And some great people there. I could think of that priest that was talking about the Irish fellow, natives. Daly, Father Daly, D-A-L-E-Y.
Okay.
He was a brilliant man. He had a B.A. from McGill, I think he took his law from McGill, but he never practiced or joined the bar or anything. He just decided he wanted to be a priest, and he became one. Marvelous man, brilliant man.
What can you tell me about non-Catholic students at St. Mary's? Are there a number?
Yeah, there were quite a few of them, yeah. That went to school, yeah. There were quite a few. I can think of some. I think of a good friend of mine, Hank Rounsfell, R-O-U-N-S-E-F-E-L-L, I think it is. Always called him Hank. He was down south, down a couple road near the arm. He went there and he took his science degree or pre-engineering, and then he went on, I think he took science, and then he went on to tech, became an engineer. I think he's an architectural engineer, and he's still working with one of the leading firms down at down at the brewery. Brown's down there. They have a big architectural firm in there. He's still with them. I forget the name of the firm. It used to be Roundsville, Kunzen, and somebody else, something like that. And there were a lot of other, I said Troy before. It was Jim Soy, the guy's name from Truro. He was non-Catholic. There was quite a representation of people from other faiths. And there was, well, Dr. Ibsen, the chiropractor in Dartmouth. He went to St. Mary's High School. He was from, he's prominent in the West End Baptist Church. His brother, that's George Ibsen, his brother Harry went to law school, and he was a lawyer in Toronto. He died quite a few years ago, 10 years ago. And there were a number of them. Not a large number, but quite a few. Jimmy Penio went there. He was a goaltender for St. Mary's, famous goaltender. He took his commerce degree, and he took over his father's business downtown, which was Pinio's Meat Market, and he did extremely well over the years. He's retired and lives in Hubbard or Chester, very wealthy man. I saw him not so long ago at a funeral. And John Wiley, he was from Rottenham. They were from Rottenham. There was Don Tremaine, the announcer, his uncle. What's his name? I know him so well. He was at St. Mary's, took science, then went into engineering, and went to Montreal to work and live for years. And Jimmy Penio was from Rockingham. He was the goaltender for St. Mary's, excellent goaltender. And then John Wiley, we called him Perchy Wiley. He became an engineer, and he was in Toronto, and he was one of the designers of the, he was a civil engineer, of the major throughways and big highways overhead, you know, downtown Toronto. Mm-hmm. When they were first built them in Toronto, he headed up that. He became very wealthy. He died. He was very prominent. He was the chairman of the board of the Children's Hospital in Toronto, and he's very prominent in civic things there, like community things. Mm-hmm. And we used to call him Perchy Wiley. Everybody had a nickname because he had red hair and freckles. And he lived on what we call the back road, the old school road in Rockingham. Jim Penny lived in Hill 70, and Tremaine there, he lived in, Donnie's uncle lived in Rockingham. And where was I? They were non-Catholics, but they thought St. Mary's had a good reputation. They went there, and they all did very well after they graduated there, all three of them. But there were many others, and probably come to my mind if I thought long enough, but those are the ones that stand out right now.
What was your nickname, if everyone had a nickname?
When I was in Rockingham, they used to laugh at the name Ignatius. I didn't know that name at all. How I got that was, my father was, well, had been Anglican. He turned Catholic eventually. He married, my mother was a Catholic, and we were just the main parish church was in Bedford. Father Martin, Cyril J. Martin, was the parish priest there for 27 years. Monsignor Martin he became. And our church in Rottenham was a satellite church. We were a mission church, they called it. We didn't have a very big church there. And he'd come down on Sundays and have Mass there, but the main service in Bedford, different things. Well, anyway, when my birth certificate, I saw it here a few years ago. I found it and it said it baptized in Rottenham, but my mother always told me that Dad took me up to Bedford St. Ignatius Church to get baptized, and when I was there, the priest, he was calling me after his brother, my father's brother, my uncle David Jones. He was killed overseas in the First World War. He was only 19. He was hit by a German shell. He was in the North in the Nova Scotia Highlanders with my mother's brother. They were together on the same gun, artillery gun. And Dave was killed, and Uncle Jerry said the worst thing was about it was that he had to up and leave his brother-in-law and his companion and friend. You know, they said, move on. They had to get the horse, drag the gun ahead, and move on. He had to leave him there. Anyway, So they named me after him, Uncle David. That's how I got David, because traditional in our family is Welsh descent. St. David's the patron saint of Wales. Wales to always have somebody in the family named David goes back for generations. I had a son, David. He died. And then I have a grandson named after him, David. And I had an uncle, David. So where was I leading? I don't know where I'm going.
You got your middle name.
Oh, yeah. So I'm at the church there and getting baptized. And my mother was home in bed because they stayed in bed for 10 days when they had a baby in those days. And I was sixth, I think, or fifth in the family then. And Father Martin said to him, "Well, what's the second name? You got a second name?" He said, "No, I don't have a second name. Just David Jones, all I want." My uncle was David Charles. And he said, "What's the second name?" He said, "I haven't got one." He said, "Well, you have to have a second name." He said, "You have to have a second name after a saint." I said, "What's the name of the church here?" He said, "Ignatius, St. Ignatius Church." He said, "Yeah, I kind of like that. Call him that." So I got David Ignatius Jones. Mother always told me I was baptized in Bedford when I found my certificate. But my mother's answer to that was, or would have been, that he'd fill him out, you know, baptized in Rottenham. But they done in Bedford, as I understand it. We had to go out there to be confirmed as well in Bedford. But anyway, that's how I got. Oh yeah, then I was in school, and I'm in grade 5. And there was a story about Ichabod Crane. Ichabod Crane, they call it Ichabod, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And Ichabod Crane, was it? Ichabod?
I'm not
Ichabod
sure.
Crane, I think it was. Mm-hmm. Ichabod Crane. Followed up for 40 years or something in New England there, or some story. Remember the story? He woke up and the world had all changed and everything like that. But anyway, teacher, we only had the old schoolhouse in Rockingham. We had a wooden schoolhouse. There were two rooms. One room you had kindergarten, grade 1, 2, 3, and 4, and one teacher. Hallway right down the middle, and on the other side was 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. And my brother finished there, Malachi, after I did, a year after. Enrollment was 62 students in that whole area. That covered from Fairview right through to Millview, up towards Bedford there. Up to some of the grays were up the end of the road near Millview. They walked down Prince's Lodge, the end of Prince's Lodge. There was Rottenham, Birch Cove, Prince's Lodge, and then Millview and Bedford. Well,